Teachers of Europe, a podcast to support practicing teachers across Europe in addressing common classroom challenges, featuring teachers that can inspire others to follow their footsteps. My name is Ruth Batista, and I'm Professional Development Manager at the European School Education Platform. Did you know that according to the Stepping Up Refugee Education in Crisis report from 2019, more than half of the world's school-age refugee children do not get an education? For most of us, education is how we feed curious minds and discover our life's passions. For refugees, it's more than that. It is the surest road to recovering a sense of purpose and dignity after displacement. How can schools play a crucial role in meeting the needs of distressed and traumatized migrant and refugee children? How can we, as educators, support them, but at the same time strengthen our mental health and well-being? Today's episode will be focusing on migrant and refugee integration at school. We will explore ways and practices as well as examples on how to achieve that and promote the well-being of teachers. In this process of promoting effective integration of refugees and collecting examples, we have invited Carol Barriuso to join us today. Carol, how are you today?
Hello, Ruta. Thank you for inviting me today. What can I say about myself? I'm an English teacher. I'm currently working near Barcelona in Catalonia in a primary school. And I've also been moderating a feature group about migrants and refugees inside the twinning for several years now. And I have some experience developing Erasmus projects linked to the topics of migrants and refugees as well.
You, as an English teacher, being involved in European projects towards the migrant and refugee students for the past 8 years, how do you prepare yourself and also your class for the arrival of these newly arrived migrant and refugee students?
I'm not going to lie to you. Preparing for this is not an easy task. Some of the migrant and refugee students that come to our classrooms bring very rough experiences and memories. As a teacher, you must remember this and treat them with the utmost respect and love. In my school, we do a lot of work on the emotional intelligence level. We do a lot of work on communicating how we feel, how the others make us feel. We do. We try to help our learners empathize with others. That helps them receive the newly arrived learners with a welcoming and open mind. If we know we are going to have a new classmate, we anticipate this information to the group through some routines. An example of this could be showing them videos that help them put themselves in the shoes of a refugee. Then they have, they read some cases maybe. Then we perform role plays where they have to pretend they're part of a family that needs to migrate, and they have to make serious decisions as who will leave, who will stay, if they don't have any resources for all of them, what they will take with them, etc. So these routines are important. But the real work starts when the student arrives to the class. We do a lot of activities to make the integration process as seamless as can be. They range from group dynamics to debates, research projects, and in all of them, we foster collaboration, especially if they're migrants or refugees that have been with us for a while now.
It's great. That's really, really interesting to hear. I don't know if you actually had the opportunity to listen, but we had a webinar on e-twinning with Ilse Derlioen. She's a full professor at the Department of Social Work and Social Pedagogy at the Ghent University. And this webinar was on supporting mental health and well-being of refugee children in school. And there's something very relevant that she says, and she says we need to rebuild connection, continuity, and connectedness to support refugee children. For this, we need to look at three words: normalization, control, and information. Information for and also from the parents, and you already talk a little bit about that. So she refers about the importance of listening to the parents on what they think about their child and getting, let's say, information from them, feedback from them. So in this sense, collaboration with the parents is crucial. Teachers should ask about particular behaviors, how to speak to them, facilitate the transition from home, and how to make it a little bit more smooth. And in a way, that's what you referred to a little bit in terms of the preparation. But she also refers to the importance of working with interpreters. Do you have any example of how that you have actually implemented this or not, or have you implemented this in a different way that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, sure. An example that comes to my mind is one that I witnessed some years ago. It was a community project in Center for Bilingualism in Sweden that collaborated with several schools in the area. They had actually staff that were not really teachers. They were migrants in the past that had been in the country for many years, and they had a good command of the language. So they were invited into the language classes so they could explain their experience and the links and differences they found between their mother tongue and Swedish. So their newly arrived could understand more what these words meant or what they really want to say with some of the expression. What impressed me the most was the parents' network established in the schools. There was a big effort made into having parents involved into the school community, not only volunteering and attending events and meetings, but also helping other newcomers understand the new reality they will encounter in general matters, but specifically at the school level. So this, I found it really, really interesting to apply at schools.
That's very nice to hear about that involvement of the parents. If you had to give like key steps, let's say one or two key steps so that the teachers that are listening to us, that they could take at this stage where they need to involve the parents, what advice would you give them?
The most important thing is that at schools we organize things so the families can participate in the school environment from the very first moment they arrive. For that, the school has to have a protocol that will list this participation. For instance, the school has to take into account that the language might be a barrier, so it must have some alternative, like having volunteers from the area that will speak the same language. In other cases, it's the child that might be the bridge between the two languages. It also depends the country they come from and how long have they been here. For instance, in our school, when we celebrate the International Library Day, we invite the families to come to tell traditional stories from the culture. But what we promote is that they do this in their mother tongue. And then we have someone translate. In some cases, it's the child that she has enough command of the language or one of the volunteer that I told before. Well, the final step after the families have been collaborating for a while is that they become an important pillar or support whenever a new migrant student arrives to the school. This is especially important if the learner comes from a country with the same culture and language, but also when they have nothing to do, as the experience of the veteran family is always helpful for the others that just arrived.
That's very interesting indeed. One year is that schools play a crucial role in meeting the needs of these distressed and traumatized migrant and refugee children. You already mentioned a few examples of how you support your students, and you already gave a few examples of how you actually provide language support examples. Could you refer to any other classroom activities and maybe give us some examples of how you implemented this support?
Yeah, I mean, we do different activities, and these activities and the reactions of the children vary a lot depending on the age, the previous experiences of the learner and their mother tongue. In my case, I teach English, and in some cases, this is a language that the migrant student can use to communicate with her peers. But unfortunately, this is not always the case, as some of the new arrivals did not learn this language in their country. What do we do then? We remind the children that it's important to respect the silent period of their classmate. We remind them that the learner will most probably be sad, anxious, and lost. and that we have to be as supportive as possible. So what we do with these activities to help the people integrate in the classroom, it consists of comparing everyday things between the countries. We compare music, food, sports, clothes, and through this comparison, they get to know how things work in their host country. But they also have the chance to realize that in many cases, the differences are not as big as they could have feared. So yeah, that's one of the most important activities that we perform in the class to help our students, both the migrant and also our regular students from the country.
Well, thanks so much for giving us, for providing us those examples. Now, actually, I wanted to move a little bit about to another topic, which is connected to this, of course. I mean, receiving all these students, having to adapt a lot of methodologies, a lot of activities, often the teacher is forgotten. And I actually wanted to reflect a little bit with you on the well-being of the teacher. In the same webinar that I referred in the beginning, we actually hear the speaker saying that being confronted with trauma is not easy. And how to deal with the uncertainty and the powerlessness of that teachers feel in such situations is actually quite complicated. Thus, it is important, very, very important, the teacher's well-being in these circumstances and how actually teachers care or can care about themselves. To share, to self-care and to understand the position of the teacher and what they can influence or what they cannot influence is very, very, very important. And we I believe that often this is not addressed, it's not reflected, and often is really forgotten, this key element of all this scenario. What do you have to say about this, Carol? Do you have any examples of actually indeed the well-being of the teacher was not being considered or was forgotten?
Well, yeah, as you said, the well-being of teachers is often forgotten. Most of the efforts are directed towards the students. That's why I believe training programs for teachers must address the psychological needs of them. When it would help grow this, not only professionally but also personally. When we have to address this, I remember one case from a Greek teacher following our course in the platform. She was pointing out that it was impossible for her to have all the teachers at school, local authorities, parents, to embrace their refugee pupils and their families. So, and it was actually thanks to the empathy of few native pupils that they managed to carry out their action plan for inclusion. So she was referring how much alone she felt in her challenge, and she also referred to how that it was making her be overwhelmed with all this, making her job more difficult. But this is just an example out of many more. So it's really we need to address this. I mean, to create a network of teachers is usually helpful because, well, you know, like you have some space and to explain your experiences and to hear from others. But I believe there should be something more like, you know, like psychologists or something external that could help our teachers, apart from previous preparation in training programs, something from outside that could help our teachers not feel so overwhelmed in front of something that should be a priority. I mean, children are our priority, right? But yeah, the well-being of the teacher who's taking care of the children, it is also a priority.
Do you have any examples of actually this support that was given to a specific teacher in this area, of course, the area of well-being? Do you have any example or any other story of a teacher that actually needed this support during an experience in the classroom and it was indeed supported by the school?
I'm afraid there are not many examples because some of the teachers are usually shy of sharing how they feel about that. And it's something that it's often taken into privacy, like one teacher to another. But it's true that there are different joint initiatives and pedagogical innovative approaches that support this well-being of teachers working with refugees. But it's, you know, these initiatives, you usually have to go look for them on your own. It's not something that it's in our systems. We are not ready for that, even though we have been receiving migrants and refugees, and not only for years now.
Yeah, maybe that's something that we need to indeed consider, to give you even more support to our teachers. Actually, in the webinar, there are some school-based preventive interventions. I believe that she was referring just to the students, but also maybe these school-based preventive interventions such as classroom drama, creative arts-based expression programs, maybe also can help some teachers. And also maybe to the teachers that are listening to us, maybe it's also an opportunity to say, please don't be shy and look for help, right?
Absolutely. But, you know, we teachers tend to have a lot of things to take care of. And like when we feel overwhelmed, sometimes it's difficult to get help from others. But I'm sure that all these programs that they were mentioning and others that exist in our feature group page, we can find lots of these. And one can address, but yeah, it's like we ask our members to, you know, to say, hey, what is the problem? How do you feel? How can we help one another? But sometimes it's tough for teachers. So yeah, I encourage teachers to say, hey, I cannot do this. How can I address it? I need help. And yeah, it's perfectly okay.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your that there's a place indeed where you can also find help without saying explicitly, I need help, but there's a community there out there. So there's a group in the tuning community that you can find this place where you can find your peers that experience the same things. And maybe just listening from the others and how they actually experience the same situations and responded to the same situations, maybe it's already a huge support and help, right? So, Carol, actually, just to continue our conversation, and again, going back to the webinar, for the children that have more trouble dealing with situation that are three aspects to take into consideration, or three aspects that we need to keep in mind. A main characteristic of trauma is that you don't have any control over the situation. So it is important to give them back control on what is possible. And being that the schedule or any other activity, like explaining what is happening. Trauma is in the body, and often the trauma cannot be verbalized, and it is reflected in other ways through the body, such as the heartbeat, etc. So some breathing exercises is advised, and learning how to deal with this aspect of trauma is very, very important. So it is important to keep the children in the present and help them learn that those memories belong to the past and are no longer happening. But this is maybe easier said than done, right, Carol? I don't know if you have any examples of actually that could help the teachers that are listening to us of how to deal with the trauma and to keep in mind these aspects that they need to control the present. They can control the present and they can control their body.
I would say that patience is the key. I mean, migrant students require time, support, attention, love, and all those things add to an already cramped schedule. I mean, the teacher must understand that the learners are are going through, both the newly arrived, but also her classmates. We must never forget that the refugee is going through. and all the traumatic experiences she's gone through until the given moment. So it's normal that she might not be participative, communicative, or receptive, and that's okay. So for me, that would be like the first thing we have to keep in our minds is that we need to be patient. We cannot force them.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Carol, we are reaching the end of our podcast today and our conversation, unfortunately. If you had to select key aspects to say to a teacher that is listening to us, key aspects that he or she should never forget when dealing with refugee children, I understand that patience would be one of them. But do you have any other key aspects that a teacher must never forget?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, like patience would be like the main point. But also something that is very important for us teachers is the curriculum. And I think we have to make the curriculum accessible. I mean, we must use the universal languages that will make education more accessible to these children that might have not been able to attend school for several years, or maybe they just went to school for a little while. So we'll be facing many barriers, not only language, but these nonverbal tools can help us scaffold the learning process, but also the languages we teach in school. What I do refer to, we should not go to teach them math, or you have to learn this social science. No, we should go through drama, puppets, to singing and dancing, and using cultural aspects. It's one way to make this curriculum accessible. So a part of the curriculum that they will feel a part of. Because if we are asking about math or science, well, it will depend on what the kid has been going through these years. How many years has the kid been in school? But in this case, singing, everyone could sing and could dance and could understand drama or puppets, or and then use ICT a lot and make it accessible for everyone. And the last thing that I would mention is essential would be the integration of the families. I mean, I said it before, but opening the school to the community has been proven to be extremely effective in countless realities and environments. But it's especially indicated when there are tough realities to take care of. Having a welcoming environment for the refugee students and their families, where they can feel appreciated, listened to, and supported, is usually a factor that can be a turning point. The school and its environment must have a strong protocols that encourage this type of welcome reception. So that, I think, these three aspects, the first I mentioned before, and these two should be like a must to help all this process out with refugee and migrant students and families.
That's great. May I add one more? Maybe the last one we could add is actually don't stay alone. Don't go through the process alone as a teacher and join a community of teachers that is doing already the same thing as you and is experiencing the same aspects and the same situations that you are in. So as you can see, there's a lot of teachers in Europe that around Europe that actually go through the same situations. So indeed, there's a lot that we can learn from each other. So maybe if you don't mind, Carol, I would add this last element to yours. So yours are patience, curriculum, and involving the families. And the last one I would add is don't stay alone and get engaged in the community of teachers that are going through the same things. And a step away is actually to join the eTwinning community and join the eTwinning group on this very topic. I would like to thank Carol. And now that we are reaching the end of this podcast, I would like to thank Carol for your input in this podcast, your experiences, and for sharing your thoughts and also your emotions with us. Thank you so much, Carol. And it's good to hear that you are in the eTwinning community also to support other teachers. So thank you so much.
So yeah, thank you so much, Rute, for inviting me, for having me here today. It's my pleasure to be able to share not only with you, but the whole community, the European community, and not only all these experiences. And just one last sentence that I would like to add after your comments on the feature group. I like using the sentence, sharing is caring. And for us teachers, it is very important that we don't feel alone. So everyone is welcome to join us in there and to help one another find support and tools and lots of, like a small community, a small network, not so small, but where everyone can feel welcome and listened to. So thank you very much again. And yeah, I hope we have the chance to talk in the next podcast, or who knows?